Behold a woman. Her perfume is a headiness in my nostrils. Her daintiness is a gladness in my eyes. Aye, the love of a woman is the true haven of man. This morning, we want you to behold a woman seen through the eyes of John Archer as he sits in the music room of his hilltop home looking west to the Pacific. Behold a woman. Any woman. All women. Good morning. The sunlight slants over the keys of my piano and on the broad bosom of the Pacific over the edge of the hills. She's tranquil today, the sea. Deceptively tranquil. But she does not fool me. I put too many years dancing attendance on her moods. I know they are many and quick changing, like the moods of a woman. For the aspect of woman is endless. When you walk into a room for the first time, do you look first at the titles of the books? Do you pride yourself that you can tell the character of the owner by his books? Then perhaps you can tell me, who was Anne Lang? What manner of person was she? I never met her, for she died long before I was born. I have only part of her library for clues. Books picked up at a shabby stall on the Thames embankment. Here they are, dozens of faded, torn paperback novels. The titles are stilted and amusing, and the pen drawings on the covers of hoop-skirted women and mutton-chopped men take you instantly back to another day. A day when the young Victoria ruled Britain's land with her beloved consort Albert. On the flyleaf of each tawdry romance, in faded childish script, is written...
This book belongs to Anne Lang.
You think you know her? She read trash and penny dreadfuls. An apple-cheeked scullery maid? Perhaps. A bit of the human flotsam that surges and struggles for a meager existence in London's teeming slums? Who was Anne Lang? Perhaps the most surprising thing about her is that she could read at all, yet here among the cheap and shabby paperbacks is a strange thing. A book of poems, leather-bound and gold-edged. Obviously worth much, much more than the purse of a scullery maid could afford. Let's open it. There's a bookmark from the library of Buckingham Palace. And in a regal hand on the flyleaf...
Some services can never be fully repaid. May this token, dear girl, ever remind you of the gratitude of your queen. To Anne Lang, from Victoria Regina, October 4th, 1839.
What service had Anne Lang, the scullery maid with a head filled with impossible romances, have performed for her queen? I have searched the history books in vain. They tell me nothing. I have only the trashy novels, the elegant volume of poetry with its regal inscription, and, of course, beneath the queen's signature, the awkward scrawl once more.
This book belongs to Anne Lang.
Who was Anne Lang? Of all the instruments I play, the organ will always be, I suppose, my first love. My mother, rest her soul, had great plans for me once. It was her fondest dream that I should someday become a fellow of music at Oxford, and in time be knighted as first organist of St. Paul's, which means, of course, first organist in the kingdom. Not an easy dream to realize, and one that will, I'm afraid, never come true. But I never cease thanking my mother every time I draw out the gorgeous sound of this king of instruments for daring to dream magnificently. All mothers, of course, dare and dream for their children, boldly or modestly, according to their lights. Nancy Hanks was a humble woman, and she dreamed humbly. She died when her son, Abraham Lincoln, was 9 years old.
If Nancy Hanks came back as a ghost, seeking news of what she loved most, she'd ask first, "Where's my son? What's happened to Abe? What's he done?" Poor little Abe, left all alone, except for Tom, who's a rolling stone. He was only 9 the year I died. I remember still how hard he cried. Scraping along in a little shack with hardly a shirt to cover his back, and a prairie wind to blow him down, or pinching times if he went to town. You wouldn't know about my son. Did he grow tall? Did he have fun? Did he learn to read? Did he get to town? Do you know his name? Did he get on?
If Nancy Hanks came back as a ghost. I knew a woman once who rented her guest room to a ghost. You see this? An old plaid carpet bag. It's empty now. You don't see things like this anymore. But before I tell you about that, I must read you something delicious. Do you know the definition of a witch? There are two meanings to the word, really. First, a witch is an ugly and repulsive old woman in wicked league with the devil. And second, a witch is a beautiful and attractive young woman in wickedness, a league beyond the devil. Ah, but of the ghostly tenant. It happened in the last place in the world one would look for such a thing. In a neat suburban house, one of a long row of houses exactly like it, from which the husbands poured each morning to catch the 8:14 for the city, while the wives in neat print cottons lingered over a last cup of coffee before clearing the breakfast dishes. The little wife in this house was having a tragedy all her own. She had waked up quite suddenly to the fact that her husband was not the same courteous, considerate, adoring swain she had once fallen in love with. He wolfed his breakfast, he grunted when she tried to make conversation. He never noticed what she wore anymore, or the new way she was fixing her hair. Luckily, they were the kind that could talk about these things to each other. And that night, she upbraided him.
You used to pay me all sorts of attentions. Now you hardly know I exist.
He protested, of course, but darling, I do love you as much as ever. It's only that somehow I don't seem to have the time. Business. Business, indeed. That led to a quarrel, all right. Until they both, being sensible people, realized what they were doing, and the quarrel dissolved in laughter and kisses. Maybe, the husband suggested jokingly, we should advertise for a ghost. A perfectly charming ghost to pay you all the little attentions while I earn a living. He could stay in the guest room. They left the matter there, but the next day the doorbell rang.
Good day. I heard you have a guest room to rent. My, what a charming way you wear your hair.
Somehow, she couldn't have told how, for the life of her, the stranger established himself in the guest room. An old plaid carpet bag was his only luggage, but he was dressed impeccably that night at dinner. He held her chair as for a queen. He conversed wittily and laughed at her sallies. He complimented her on her gown and her cooking. The contrast to the treatment she had been getting from her husband was a very marked one indeed. And when her husband objected to taking her to the theater, the stranger quickly offered to escort her. Before long, he became an indispensable part of the household. At first, the husband was rather relieved. But one evening, he picked up the papers he had brought from the office. Good night, dear, he said briefly. I'll work over these reports in the den. He gave her his usual absent-minded peck on the cheek. The stranger laughed.
Call that a kiss? Now here's a real kiss.
The husband was vaguely troubled as he worked on his reports. The next night, he beat the stranger to it and held his wife's chair. The stranger stepped aside. And from then on, each time the husband volunteered a gallantry toward his wife, the stranger gave way until finally, the little wife made a discovery.
Why, he's gone. He's been gone for days, and I haven't missed him.
It was true. Only the little plaid carpet bag that had been the stranger's only luggage remained in the guest room. And the next day, the bag, too, was gone. Possibly to the guest room of another suburban house in another suburban town. Who knows? What's that? How did I get hold of the old plaid carpet bag? Ah, now, there are some questions you shouldn't ask. The dominant male. You know how dominant he really is. As a matter of fact, 127 male children must be conceived to every 100 girl babies to make the male and female population come out even at maturity. Yes, who's so rugged now? Something borrowed, something blue. Cold hands, warm hearts. There's not one of us that doesn't have a touch of superstition inside. They'll always be with us, superstitions. Our forefathers had them, and new ones are continually sprouting from the people. If you wander among the Ozark Mountain folk, here are some of the signs and portents they will tell you true. Don't marry in rain or snowy weather. Unlucky. If you burn your cornbread, your sweetheart is angry at you. If you have a cobweb over the door, that means he will never call again. Grain of wisdom in that one. If a red bird flies across your path, you'll be kissed before the night. And if you stub your toe, a sweetheart will appear within the hour. When a damsel's skirt flies up or her stocking falls down, her lover is thinking about her. Well, he is if he's there to see, sure. And here's a special beauty hint. For those annoying freckles, apply rainwater caught on the 1st of June. You may have to wait several years before it rains on the 1st of June, of course, but don't worry. The freckles will still be there. Yes. I seldom play this Celeste now. It's over 100 years old, and its tunes are very fragile. But it still has many a gay, happy melody in it. It was given to me by one of the most wonderful women I've ever met. And I've met many wonderful women. The Countess Fabrizi, over 80 herself, yet straight as a ramrod, for all she walked with a cane. She knew her own mind, and she loved good food. I met her only once. I came to the garden of her villa on a strange mission. It was in Martinique. She lived almost directly under the dread volcano Pele, which a century ago snuffed out the lives of 500,000 people in a single day. She greeted me.
Ah, Mr. Archer, it is a pleasure. So few visitors I have nowadays. And very few such handsome men. No. First dinner in the arbor beside the fountain here. Then business. I must show off my Pierre, the pride and joy of my declining years. No one makes a clear turtle soup like Pierre. And wait until you taste his omelette au fin herbe. Ah, heavenly. I inherited Pierre, you know, when my cousin Nicholas died.
But, Countess, it is about your cousin Nicholas that I am here.
So? A tragic loss. But that happened some years ago.
True, madame. You remember there was some doubt about his death at the time, a talk of foul play.
Gossip, nothing was proved. Nicholas slipped on the stone staircase of his house and fractured his skull in falling. Who would kill a harmless old man? Yet, they even suspected poor Pierre. There was no evidence, but merely because Pierre was the only other person in the house...
I beg your pardon, Countess. Evidence has come to light since. Read this letter, please.
It is Nicholas' handwriting.
Yes. And notice the date.
April, the day he died.
Yes.
Dear Augustine, I am very much afraid I shall have to get rid of Pierre. He cooks divinely, but he has the temper of a fiend. And I am really in bodily fear of him. The other day I became so irritated at his conceit and obstinacy that at last I threw a cup of coffee in his face. I laughed at his threat of killing me and thought the whole thing would blow over. That he scowls and mutters in a highly unpleasant fashion, and several times I have fancied he was following me as I walked. Well, may I ask where you got this letter, Mr. Archer?
A friend of mine appointed me executor. I found it among his effects.
Have you shown it to anyone?
No. But, Count, what are you doing?
I am burning it. There. Farewell, Cousin Nicholas. Rest in peace.
But, madame, I don't understand. You're shielding a common murderer.
A common murderer, perhaps. But a very uncommon cook. Ah, dinner is served.
I wonder how Pierre would have got along as an army cook with the recipes of the field ration manual.
Peel, wash, and dice 6 bushels of potatoes. Add 1 bushel medium-sized onions, 2 pounds salt, 350 pounds of fresh ground sirloin.
Sounds delicious and very filling. Listen. A great heart is beating. Throughout his tragic life, Ludwig von Beethoven longed for love, for the haven of a home, and the comfort and companionship and adoration of a woman. His face was ugly, his manners gruff and forbidding. Yet a woman loved him. A woman saw through the harsh exterior to the burning light within. A woman always will. Who was the immortal beloved? Giulietta, Teresa, Bettina? He never named her. We have only his letters.
My thoughts go out to you, my immortal beloved. Now joyfully, now sadly. Oh, God, why is it necessary to be apart from one who is beloved? Your love makes me at once the happiest and the unhappiest of men. My life, my love, farewell. Oh, continue to love me. Ever thine, ever thine. Ever for each other.
Ever thine, ever thine. Ever for each other. Yes, the aspect of woman is endless. Woman is the lift of an eyebrow and the curve of an arm, the glint of a jewel on a living breast, and the hint of an elusive perfume, now present, now gone. The quickening of a pulse and the faint, far-off song of a bird. Woman is all this, and how much more? Who can truly say he has ever fathomed the heart of a woman? Behold a woman. She is God's creature. This program is a Carlton E. Morse production featuring Michael Raffetto as John Archer and written by Lawrence Goldman. Your announcer, Dresser Dahlstedt.